All right, so welcome everybody to a special Latte 2023 edition of the Omaha Bar Association Bar Talk podcast. I'm Dave Summers, Executive Director of the Omaha Bar. I am in the self-help space in the Douglas County Courthouse with the staff of the Tenant Assistance Project, who is our 2023 Lori Smith Camp Integrity in Service Award recipient, Tenant Assistance Project. It has been in existence for 3 years now?
In Douglas County, we started in August of 2021, so a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Got it. And I'm going to have, we're going to go around the room and everybody can introduce themselves and say the position that they hold here at Tenant Assistance Project.
My name is Leah Beese. I am the Tenant Assistance Project Managing Attorney.
Hi there. I am Ryan Sump. I am one of the co-facilitating attorneys for the project in Douglas County.
I am Cass Ward. I'm the administrative assistant for TAP in Douglas and Lancaster County.
I am Sarah O'Neill, and I am the other co-facilitating attorney for TAP in Douglas County.
Lovely. Are we missing anybody that's staff for TAP? Probably some Lancaster person?
We have a facilitating attorney in Lancaster County who works exclusively in Lancaster County, and then another paralegal who does some support work for Lancaster as well.
Great. So I'd love to get a little history of how y'all came to be a part of the program what drew you to it. So we're going to go in reverse order here. Sarah, we'll start with you.
So I started with the Tenant Assistance Project in Lancaster County. It began there, I believe, in May of 2020. And I started volunteering in July 2020 before I was going to be a part of the UNL or Nebraska Law Civil Clinic in the fall. And I wanted to just get my toes wet. And so I've been volunteering or in clinic or I guess now employed with TAP for the last nearly 3 years, I guess.
I have a history of human services work. That was my career before COVID and after, during COVID. And I decided that I wanted to do a little more of the background work when it comes to the human services type of career, genuinely because I just love spreadsheets. And this was a perfect position to be able to still help the community that I reside in and, you know, be a part of something bigger and also take care of my mental health by like taking a step back.
I too love spreadsheets. So if done correctly, they're beautiful. If done poorly, they are horrible to look at.
It's very true. Mine are gorgeous. Just quick flex.
I love it. Wow.
They're beautiful, Cass.
Some shade. Okay.
Yeah.
She was so nice to you earlier today.
I know.
Well, there may be a new opening if this continues, if this heat continues here.
Right? Yeah, Leah's spot.
Exactly. We know where this office is run from. Right.
All right. So, so for me, I graduated from Nebraska Law in 2019, but then I just sort of took a year to try to find some employment opportunities outside of law. That didn't end up going anywhere, so I ended up taking the 2020 bar. And then after, let me think, it was either after I got my results back or after I was admitted. I was still looking for work, and I was still living in Lincoln at the time. And my dad showed me an article that the World Herald had written about TAP in Lancaster County at the time, just kind of saying, oh, this is really cool, you should go out there. So I did, and I basically, in a lot of ways, treated it as kind of my own clinic experience.
Yeah.
Outside of still being in school, just kind of learning some ropes, meeting some people. So I volunteered most days. TAP was in business down there for probably about 4 or 5 months, and then I was able to move over to Legal Aid of Nebraska, where I was on the housing team there. And then an opening with TAP came open early last year. So I jumped back over here.
Nice. That's great. A volunteer that got into the program. That's awesome.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah. I have been out of law school longer than these guys. So a little more history. But the gist of it is I went to law school in Nebraska, eventually moved to North Carolina where I worked for Legal Aid of North Carolina, doing a little bit of everything, housing, domestic violence, government benefits, that sort of stuff. At the beginning of COVID, I moved back to Nebraska and had a brand new baby and stayed home for a few months. And then I wanted to get back involved in this kind of work, helping low-income folks, helping civil legal needs. But because of the brand new baby, I did not want to be doing direct client representation. So I was looking for an opportunity to do meaningful work without the case handling responsibilities. And so I fell in with the Volunteer Lawyers Project, started as the case referral attorney, doing TAP on the side, and then with some restructuring, came in as the TAP managing attorney last March, I believe. And here I am.
That's great. And obviously, one bar association to another appreciates seeing bar association staff. It's a near and dear spot to my heart. The work done here on a week-to-week basis, let me butcher this, and then you guys can come and tell me about what I'm getting incorrect. So it is helping attorneys do pro bono, limited scope in a short period of time, pro bono work to help people that are facing eviction here in Douglas County and Lancaster County, and using some community resources to help that process, educating those attorneys, and really making it one of those situations that as an attorney, you can come in, do your hour and a half, 2 hours, and then move on and not necessarily worry about the case hanging over your head necessarily as it would if you did pro bono in private practice, or sometimes off of the case referral list that you were a part of before.
Yeah. Where you are on the hook for the entire divorce case.
Right, exactly. Which still exists and is still out there, the low bono and the pro bono opportunities through VLP as well.
Yes, and they're all great, they're a wonderful experience. Roxanne Al-Hajjaj is who you want to talk to at the Bar Association for those opportunities.
Yeah. Did I get it right on what the scope is, generally speaking?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And so let me ask you a question. How many attorneys are volunteering a week? How many cases are we talking about that are coming through in a week that you guys are helping on?
One thing that we've seen over the last year is a steady increase in the number of cases each week. There are outliers where we have a slow week, but generally the number of cases are creeping up. And so I think probably 100 cases a week is a typical week, but this week we had closer to 130. So it varies, but it's quite a few. We've got wonderful volunteers who show up week after week. I think our core group of volunteers is probably 25-ish that are our regular volunteers. But we've had, since the beginning of the program in Omaha, more than 100 different volunteers, attorney volunteers. So people come in and out, but we've got a core group that we see frequently.
And you don't have to be part of the core group to come in. Really, there's a sign-up sheet and anybody can come in and help.
Truly. Yeah. I mean, even if you come in once every 6 months, that is doing good. That is helping people. And we try to make it as easy as possible for people to do just that. Or you don't have to be here every single week to know how to help in one of these cases. You don't have to be an expert in landlord-tenant law to come down and make a difference in your volunteering. We're trying to give you all of the supports that you need so you can just come use your general attorney skills and help when you can.
Mm-hmm. I'd say also litigation skills aren't even something that we necessarily think that people have to come in with, just because most of what we do is negotiating and sort of mediating and at the end of the day, that's why we have multiple facilitators and a managing attorney, because we're here to help our volunteers, and we're that stable source of ongoing knowledge of the Landlord-Tenant Act in Nebraska and how this Courtroom 20 works and operates and how we do TAP. So we're there to help anyone who wants to come.
And what is, so I, full disclosure, I was here yesterday volunteering with TAP, so I had a front row seat as to what's going on. You guys helped me not destroy somebody's life by misrepresenting anything. We got some people to get some funds to stay in their place. They were in between jobs. They essentially needed an extra month to help them and their back rent paid so that they could stay in the house, the apartment, and get that job that they needed. So I think we were successful yesterday, but in general, what can you give me sort of a couple scenarios that happen when people are coming in and what their situation looks like? And then we'll talk a bit about you know, the solutions for that situation, but you know, what's a sort of standard sort of person that you see that's in eviction court?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, I think it's probably close to at least 90% of the cases we see on a day-to-day basis are involved in not paying a rent. So that's very, very common. You know, as everyone is still kind of trying to get caught back up and reestablished after COVID, and a lot of people lost jobs during that time, things like that. So just in that situation, easily by far the most common outcome of those cases would be that the attorney that volunteers with us talks to the landlord's counsel, plaintiff's counsel, and just facilitates a discussion between, you know, the tenant, the landlord, and the wonderful rental assistance organizations that we still have working with us, that the plaintiff is allowed to have a writ against the defendant, have judgment against them, but they agree to hold it for probably usually what's most common is 2 or 3 weeks to let that money come in, and then plaintiff would then come back to the court, move to dismiss the case, vacate the judgment, and the tenant is able to keep residing at their home.
And so the third party rental assistance that's out there, there are a few different ones, right? There's mm-hmm. and Match, I don't know how you spell that. I always
MACCH.
MACCH is kind of the big player, but there's some other mm-hmm. Douglas County Rental Assistance.
Yeah, we have Together Inc. and then Family Housing Advisory Services. For a while, Heartland Family Services was a really big part, and now we usually just refer to them without like directly coordinating with them if we need to.
And these services, these rental assistance programs, can, within the 2 week period or what have you, they can get that assistance to the landlord, essentially pay the landlord for non-payment and get them caught up.
Yeah.
So most of the time it's either approval of rental assistance that's needed or the payment verification is needed. But either way, we as a team communicate really closely with the rental assistance agencies to talk about those kinds of deadlines. We've gotten into a habit, if there's a pushed deadline that's very, very soon, we all kind of gather around and get that done.
And Leah, you and I were talking before, and I'm a stats guy, so I always think stats tell a great story here. In terms of, you know, you talked about 100, 130 people coming into eviction court being helped by TAP every week. What are the success rates of those people not getting an eviction right there? They're out, you know, within, is it 72, 48, 72 hours? I should know this better, I'm sorry.
No, so if there is an eviction judgment entered today mm-hmm. and the plaintiff gets the writ of restitution that same day, this person, the tenant could be out of their home this afternoon.
Wow.
It can happen as quickly as today.
Yeah.
it can be as long as 10 days, but we very rarely see that. It is a very quick turnaround time from the time someone is evicted to the time they're actually out on the street.
Yeah. And so so that would be worst case scenario, was that they were evicted and they're out. And but there's a tremendous success rate if they're helped through the program to not have that happen.
Yes. So very, very few cases result in that immediate eviction. I think overall less than 2% of the cases over the last year. Based on just the numbers that we have for February, and I think these are pretty representative of overall, we're looking at half of the cases are giving the tenant time to pay, to catch up on rent, and to be able to stay where they're at. So they're just getting caught up, and then they're able to continue on in their current living situation. Another quarter is a time for the tenant to vacate. So, you know, they get a few days, a week, 2 weeks of time to plan to leave their place. You know, a few days is a whole lot more time than a few hours that they would get otherwise. And so that's time for them to get connected with resources, find a new place to live, that sort of thing. And then close to a quarter of the remaining cases, about a quarter of the total cases, are either dismissed or continued to a later date with just that 2% eviction rate.
And if, and this is something that you guys have really helped me understand, if a person has an eviction on their record, it follows them around and really makes it difficult for them to find another place to rent. Mm-hmm. If they can't find another place to rent, the rents will be much higher, the terms will be much worse for them. And so with giving them a few extra days, it's generally speaking that there's not an eviction. They're just, they give back the keys, they move out, and the eviction part is dismissed, right?
Yes, so the way that the deals are generally structured, there's an eviction judgment entered on the day of court, but then if the tenant complies with whatever the agreement is, then the plaintiff will come back in and vacate that judgment and dismiss the case. So the eviction filing will still show up on their record. There's nothing we can do about that without legislative changes. But the case is dismissed, which gives the tenant a leg to stand on when talking with their next landlord. Like, look, this was filed, but the case was dismissed. I was not evicted. This is why you should still rent to me.
Yeah. And we also know that if somebody is evicted, you know, the locks are changed and their personal possessions are put in storage by the landlord, or thrown away after a pretty short period of time, that also can be a huge setback to somebody who's living paycheck to paycheck and now has an eviction on the record and the personal possessions, which meant a lot to them, they spent a lot of money on, are now gone, right? Mm-hmm. And that puts them even further behind, mm-hmm. in this world of living paycheck to paycheck. And so that also adds to how important it is to not let that eviction take place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that, imagine having to start over with everything, furniture, clothes, all of the things for your children. Starting from scratch, it takes a ton of money to just have the basic things. So when people are evicted, they're losing not only their home, they're losing those possessions, and it perpetuates a cycle of poverty that keeps people showing up in eviction court over and over again.
I've asked this question, and I don't know if anybody has had the answer, and it's just a stupid, Dave asked too many questions that nobody can answer, that started when I was a child, and my mom will affirm that. But if somebody is evicted and becomes homeless, and, you know, we're talking about how much money the community has to spend to support that person and get them back into a house situation, that amount of money that it costs to help that person get back on their feet is so much more than if that can be avoided, right? Mm-hmm. And I always think that's in tens of thousands, and I think there was a legal aid presentation a few years ago where they maybe put a number of, you know, $20,000 or something like that on what an eviction can do financially to put somebody in a hole and put the community in a position that they have to help more than they would if it was not there. So I don't know if you guys have any stats on that or any idea of what that would cost, you know. But when somebody's homeless, it does cost a lot for the community to help them, right? Mm-hmm. Generally speaking.
A ton.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I would say my time in the human services portion of like the homeless community, honestly, what I saw the most is like people not being able to access community support. The information, the applications, the processes, the government timelines, deadlines, all that kind of stuff is just not accessible, especially when someone has just gone through losing every single thing they have. Some people are living in their cars or, you know, trying to work full time and take care of babies. And it's just the community support is there, and that's not the issue. The issue is that people can't get to it.
Right. And you brought up a really good point, which is trying to work if you don't have a stable home situation becomes so much more difficult.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the project, the tenant assistance project, part of the State Bar of Nebraska, Nebraska State Bar Volunteer Lawyers Project, it's here to stay. This isn't a flash in the pan moment, right?
That's the goal. Part of where we are right now is transitioning this program from emergency response to COVID to a long-term sustainable program, because the need isn't going away. And so the Bar Association has been extraordinarily supportive of the project, and the goal is to keep it here for good.
And I think there's a misconception that landlords are anti this project, when what I saw yesterday was thousands of dollars being directed to landlords to pay for non-payment of rent, which seems to be in the landlord's favor to get paid, get caught up. I'm not sure that they're losing out because the project's here, right?
I would say actually quite often the landlords come up to us asking us like, hey, is this tenant here? This is what we're willing to do. Or even just today, I had two landlords come up to me and ask if the tenant was there and said, when they show up, this is what we want and they can stay.
I even had one come up to me who had already gotten judgment, but her office had called her right after she left the courtroom and said that person went to her office instead of coming to the courthouse. So she expected him to come, but that she was going to have to leave. But that if he did show up, they would be willing to work with MASH to get rental assistance and would hold the writ despite him being late, her already getting judgment, and having left the courthouse. They were still like wanting to come up to us real quick to make sure we got that person sorted, like just in case they showed up, which is really great.
Is this sort of program something that happens in other states? Are we uniquely situated here in Nebraska?
There are other similar, there are other states that have tried other approaches. I think we are in a unique position just numbers wise in terms of a relatively manageable number of eviction filings compared to the number of available attorney volunteers. So we are able to provide an attorney for every single person who walks through the doors. And so I know there are other programs where the tenants are given legal advice, but not matched with their own attorney to actually represent them. And there are some different models out there, but I think I don't know if we are the only one, but we are one of the few that is providing direct representation to every single person walking through the doors.
And we got to give a shout out to some of the rock star volunteer attorneys, right? I mean, let's talk about some of them. Let's get the dirt on who's rock star. I saw Jay Jackson did a great job yesterday. He's actually our law day speaker. So there's another little tie-in for our law day, which that's where we're going to give the award out to y'all. So anybody listening, sign up for law day, May 2nd, Field Club of Omaha. You know, Tom Showmaker, talked to him last week, speaking your guys' praise. Like, let's get the word out. Who's doing good work here?
There are so many of them. We are it sounds cheesy, we are so lucky to have such wonderful volunteers coming down and donating their time. You know, we've got a range of people who are brand new, just graduated from law school. This is their first, you know, time representing a client, to the complete opposite end, the Tom Showmaker, Dave Ernst, you know, big name trial attorneys who are coming down and helping us. I don't want to leave people out.
We have folks who have retired,
yeah,
who, or folks who have left the legal profession almost entirely, but are maintaining their license just to volunteer with TAP. And I don't want us to start naming names because I know we'll forget. Because we just have, luckily, like a nice long spreadsheet of people. Yeah. But
well, and Amy Van Horn, a legal aid president, she donates her time all directions, seems like, and she comes through. It's one of those things, Ryan, to your point of getting out of school and getting that experience, I see clinic students here, I see law school students here matched up with attorneys that have done it. There are some community volunteers that that don't have law licenses at all that are out here. I'm a big clinic person. Like I was big on clinic in law school, and I think clinic opportunities for law students is just tremendously important and huge. And so how has that been to have law students learning through the program?
Yeah,
I see it as great, but I don't know you all.
No, yeah, it definitely has been great. We had quite a large contingent of students from Creighton out here today, actually, and one of the students, she worked on, I think, three cases today, and she definitely made a remark when she was leaving about how much she learned today, and how just in general how good of an experience it is to actually be able to figure out how you talk to another attorney, how you talk to a client, how you analyze what they're saying versus what the law is, and, you know, just things like that. I came at it from already having graduated, but I did kind of a lot of the same too when I was still volunteering in Lancaster, and it's just really a valuable experience for any student who, or just anyone really who is interested in kind of trying to pick up some new tricks.
One of the things that we try to do with students and newer attorneys is pair them with a more experienced volunteer. So they get the opportunity to work with attorneys, just shadowing them even, and seeing how differently different attorneys handle these cases. And I think exposure to that early in your career is incredibly beneficial. Mm-hmm. But also from the flip side, our more experienced attorneys love working with law students. They love getting to walk a law student through this process. And so I think both ends of that spectrum are really enjoying that aspect.
I think that's an important point is you're setting people up not to fail, but to succeed through this too. And I'll just, again, because I'm so self-centered, talk about my experience of not knowing anything about how to do this, or having not set foot in a courtroom for a very long time with the purpose of actually representing somebody. You guys have done a great job in making sure that I was not set up to fail in any way down the line. So that's something that I've seen firsthand. And my anxiety level was probably at a 15. First couple times came down, and then realized that, you know, I could tell you guys, I think Dave Pantos is maybe the better guy to try this. He's standing next to me, he does this better. I can negotiate, but I can't really go in there and do the trial as well as somebody that's more established. So I have to say that I've given you guys plenty of opportunities to give me more than I could handle, and you haven't, which I appreciate. So
I do think another selling point of TAP is the limited scope nature applies not only to just the time, like being able to come for an hour and a half, 2 hours one morning as often or as little as you'd like, but also in the scope of like what the attorney actually does. So if their representation, if they don't feel comfortable with it extending to trial, if it ends at negotiation, if it ends at advice, they're the one who can make that decision, and then they can let us facilitators know that that's what they want to do, and that's fine. And we'll like either pair that person up with another attorney, or just, you know, assume that our attorney who told us that has given them the best advice that they could in that situation. And I think that allows for people of all different experience levels to come and enjoy the project.
And again, back to stats, because why would I ever get off of stats? But in terms of attorney hours volunteered through the service, through the project, any estimates on what that looks like month to month, year over year?
Well, I pulled the numbers from the beginning of the program, and my best guess, for every sign up, they're committing to an hour and a half of time, knowing that sometimes it's more than that, sometimes it's less than that, but roughly 1,800 attorney hours in the last year and a half.
Wow.
Which is extraordinary. I mean, all of that volunteer time that could have been billed by these attorneys, it's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, let's just say for sake, it's $200 an hour for an attorney right now, and we know Tom Schoemaker bills more than that an hour. We know I bill a lot less than that an hour. So, but yeah, that, oh my gosh, if I don't like to do the math here. Yeah, maybe
$360,000.
There we go. That is quite the value. I don't know. Did any of you get a chance to meet Judge Smith Camp before she passed? She was awesome. And this award that y'all are getting, it's only the third year that we've had it. And Deb Gill got it last year, first U.S. attorney, female U.S. attorney for Nebraska, and Judy Gashbagash, two amazing individuals representing the best, which was Joe Smith Camp. So when it was decided by OBA past presidents that y'all were the ones to get it, it was a special moment, because those are the people that know the best of the best in the profession and what y'all have been doing. So you got affirmation from the top tier of this profession that this is worth recognizing as one of the best. So I'm so excited that we get to give you this lovely award to put next to other OBA awards that may still be in this office somewhere.
One stat that I will throw out there, because I asked them for it. You know, one of the highlights that we have is that we are really trying to make this a collaborative process. You know, we're trying to help tenants, and in helping tenants, we're helping landlords, right? You know, the dispersal of money, I think, shows that. For MATCH specifically, since May of last year, $1.6 million has been dispersed directly related to TAP cases.
Wow.
So they have dispersed more money on top of that in cases unrelated to TAP. But as a direct result of efforts at TAP, landlords have been paid $1.6 million in the last year. And I think that is a significant benefit to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, there is going to be a period of time when different funds will be needed if we're going to continue to do this in the same level, right? And that's even changed maybe from during the pandemic or right after a lot of the restrictions of the pandemic lifted, in terms of MATCH was paying back rent and fees and then forward a few months. And now, as I understand it, they'll pay that next month. At most, and people have used up the allotted amount that they get. Is it 18 months or something like that? And they have to show that they need it and they meet the income requirements and all that. But there's going to be a point when we need to look at how we're going to continue to help people not be evicted or not lose their home, and kicking that can down the road in terms of finding affordable housing that they can be in. So there's a bigger conversation that needs to be had as eviction numbers are rising, and the funds that we have right now, the resources may be dwindling or changing a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big problem. There is an affordable housing shortage in this country, in the state, in this city specifically. And when that rental assistance money becomes, as it becomes scarcer, more people are going to have to move out because they're not going to be able to have the money to stay. But where do they go? And that is a question beyond what we can do. I mean, that is a structural, societal problem. And I think it requires the efforts of everybody in our community. You know, to the extent that we can, we are trying to plan for what we are going to do as a program when that money runs out, for lack of a better term, and trying to get connections with other community resources and organizations to help people try to locate that housing and try to cushion the blow as much as we can. But it's going to be painful, and that housing shortage is going to become more and more apparent.
Is there a date window when we're looking into the future that we know that it's going to, something's going to have to happen?
I think in the short term, there will be changes in terms of number of months of eligibility, things like that. It is, the organizations are doing their best to make the money last as long as possible while still helping the most people that they can. So it is not immediately going to go from all the money to nothing. But I think over the next few months, there will be gradual changes that limit what is available to any particular person.
There's been a change, or maybe I'm misreading this, but it seems like there's been a change in terms of what sort of lease terms landlords are necessarily coming up with now post-pandemic, in terms of maybe they're charging more and having shorter terms on their leases. Obviously rents are still going up in Douglas County. There are some income restricted public housing options, but for the private side, there's sometimes they're just raising the rates and pricing people out of what they've been in for a long time, right?
It is not uncommon for us to have a tenant who has been in their apartment for 5 years or 10 years or whatever it is, whose rent has been increased and they can no longer afford it. You know, rents are going up. It's just a fact. And we see the effects of that every day.
I think old landlords are now selling to bigger, like, national corporations. You know, who can charge whatever they want.
I read that story about the conglomerates coming in, the private equity coming in, and just buying up starter homes left and right, and rental homes, and raising the rates.
Yeah. And one of the other concerns with that, in addition to just these companies coming in and raising the rates, but also the standards of living in these places, the habitability issues, you know, are the repairs being made, or is this place crumbling around the tenants, and while the tenants are still expected to pay more in rent each month? You know, we hear some horror stories about the conditions that some of these tenants are living in, but still paying, you know, more than my mortgage each month in rent. And it's
right.
And it's still that question, where else do they go? Like, we had a tenant this morning who was trying to reunify with her two kids and could not, because the place that she now lives has, like, water coming through the floor, and she isn't able to get her family back until she moves, but she needs time to find a new place and has been applying. And it's just very, the cycle of poverty is very apparent in our everyday work weeks. Yeah.
And again, because I don't want this podcast to stop, I'm going to ask something else. And it's not legal advice, but I've noticed that even something that I did as when I was renting, which was I would say, I'll withhold rent because you're not making this place habitable. You're not making this change. You can't. You will still be evicted for non-payment of rent because you are not paying your rent. You can't use that as sort of a strategy. They can still start that eviction if you do not pay your rent. So don't think that that's leverage when I just have to say that as somebody who thought that they were smarter than the system, I was dumber than the whole thing because they can still evict you under that, right? Yeah.
Yes, please don't do that. but yeah, no, I mean, it definitely is something that it makes sense that you would think that's how the system should work. Unless the legislature decides otherwise, your apartment being in an awful state or something being broken, does not excuse rental payments. And that is something that is fairly common to run into both here and for our friends at Legal Aid as well. People who think that's how the system should work. So that's what they do.
Well, and Google is misleading. People Google things, and
other states have different laws, and that's what they're reading.
Gotcha. Yes. That makes sense. All right. One last anything for the good of the order.
I would like one shout out. Yeah. I'm sorry to keep adding things.
No, it's great.
We have helped more than 1,600 households since this program began, and I just think that that is incredible. Like, that is 1,600 families who have been impacted by us, but by our volunteers. Like, this, none of this would be possible without our incredible attorney volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is just, it's amazing what they've been able to accomplish in this time.
Yeah. One of those volunteers is you, Dave.
Oh, shout out to Mrs. Summers. Well, you know, here's the deal. You guys really hooked me in when you got me the official name tag. Mm-hmm. I can't shake the emails now. When I see it, I'm like, you know, that name tag, that official name tag, is sitting there, waiting for you to sign up again. So
yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is.
You guys are great, making it that I can't say no. No, it's been great, and makes me feel like I actually do something with my degree now. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
I do have one more thing.
Oh, yeah. Please.
So, while the attorneys are shouting out to our volunteer attorneys, I do not work with the volunteer attorneys. I work with community volunteers. And I just want to shout out to Gabriel Gray and Sarah Wheeler, because without them, my job would be almost impossible. So, yes, volunteer attorneys, absolutely incredible. But those two people are what helps keep me afloat, which helps keep the entire team afloat, which helps everything.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. And Sarah's been great to work with. I haven't worked with Gabriel, but it's that person on the other side helping with those rental assistance funds. If it was just a faceless website, I don't know how this process would work, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having us.